Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, we've already divided up Lakshana into Prayojanavati and Rudhi Lakshana. Lakshana that serves a special purpose of generating some subtle suggestion of some idea, and other kind is just conventional and it doesn't have any special idea involved. Damodara Prabhu, you coming? We can take the example of the name Vishwaksena. Now, if you analyze it grammatically, you see the suffix Vishwak, Vishwanch, and the noun Sena, now army. So, and Vishwanch means, is an adverbial word, it means everywhere. So, actually, the noun Vishwa, universe, comes from that. So you might think that derivationally the meaning would be just someone who has his army everywhere, a big and powerful, a powerful king with armies all over the place, could be called Vishwaksena. Well, that's by derivation. But derivation is weaker than and overruled by convention. The convention is that it refers to the Supreme Lord. He's called Vishwaksena. And it's not generally used just to refer to any king who has a lot of armies. In addition, the meaning can be extended figuratively to mean a particular associate of Lord Narayan, a devotee of Lord Narayan, called Vishwaksena. Is he the army, the commander of Narayan's army? Yes? In chief. Okay. Generalissimo Vishwaksena, a particular devotee associate of Narayan. But that's considered Lakshinika, extended figurative meaning. The literal meaning by Rudi, by convention, is Lord Narayan himself. But there are contexts in which we have to apply this extended figurative meaning. When we're told in the worship of the Supreme Lord, we also worship his associates. And on the list of associates is Vishwaksena. That doesn't mean Narayan himself, but the devotee of Narayan. That has to be understood figuratively. That particular Lakshana doesn't suggest anything. To call that devotee Vishwaksena, it's just his name. His mother gave him that name. It's just conventional that he's called Vishwaksena. So it's a Rudi Lakshana, not a Prayojanaviti Lakshana. It doesn't serve a purpose of suggesting anything. But you have to distinguish that as opposed to the literal meaning, Narayan himself. So it has to be recognized as a lakshana, a metaphorical usage, even though it doesn't serve any suggestive purpose. Now we look at the other example, Gangayam Goshaha, the cowherd village on the Ganga. There we have a purpose of suggestion. Because when we talk about the village being on the Ganga, we're suggesting that the village is very sacred and that the environment must be cool, being near the breezes that carried the water of the river. It must be a cool and it must be a sanctified place. That's suggested. So that is an example of Prayojanavati Lakshana. Kumarale Bhatta in his Shloka Vartika. This is not a book on poetics primarily. Kumarale Bhatta is the member of the Mimamsa school who has written a major commentary on Jaimini's Mimamsa Sutras. The book has two parts. Part of it's written in verse, and I think the latter part is written in prose. So you have the Shloka Vartika and the Tantra Vartika, two different books, but they're really one commentary on Jaimini's sutras. So Kumarala says this, Kumarala Bhatta, Abhideya Vina Bhuta Pratitir Lakshanochyate Lakshamana Gunayar Yogad Viter Ishta Tu Yau Gaunata. When there is perception of something that is not completely separate from the literal idea, when you get from a word an idea that's somehow related to the literal meaning, that can be called lakshana. But he distinguishes when this is done in terms of quality of the thing that is being compared to. Not compared to, the thing that's being compared. Like the moon is being compared, the face is being compared to a moon. The moon is a face. The face is a moon. We're really talking about a face. We're not astronomers talking about the moon. We're poets talking about some lady's face. But we're saying that face is a moon. That's a metaphor. So when the lakshana is simply in terms of shared quality, then that's, according to Kumarala Bhatta, that should be called something else. It's called gauna. And he considered it a separate mode of expression. You have abhida, or literal meaning, you have lakshana, and then you have also gauna, you know, where it's a relationship, but a relationship only of quality, not of something else. Now, this is different than our opinion. Our opinion is that this gonavritti, this is actually just a subcategory of lakshana. Lakshana can be based on something, some connection of some other kind of connection, or it can be based on sameness of quality. When it's sameness of quality, then it's a subcategory called gauna lakshana. But Kumarala Bhatta and some others separate gauna as a totally different category of a different kind of mode of expression of meaning. That doesn't matter that much. He also, Kavi Karnapur then quotes from the Kavya Prakash, the book on which he based this book, Mamata's book, in the second chapter, Vyangena Rahita Rudhau Sahita Tu Prayojane. We have Rudhi Lakshana and Prayojanavati Lakshana. there's something different about the two. When you have a Rudhi Lakshana just established by convention, like, you know, Vishnu's associate being called Vishvaksena, that just happens to be his name, there's nothing suggested. There's no Vyangya, there's no Dwani created by that. But when you have Prayojanavati, purposeful Lakshana, then a Dwani should be created by it. That is the purpose, is the Dwani. Okay, any questions about that much? Okay, you were a split second before.
So the Dvani of Gayam Gosha Pradivashati, is that is a special, it's a pious town, like you said.
Yeah, the piety and the coolness, both of those are suggested.
Oh, Satya Apavana, okay.
Shaitya. That's it?
Okay.
Nityananda Prabhu?
I think in the end, Vyangya Narahita Rudhos Sahita to Prayojan and so on. Could you kindly go again briefly through what's the purpose?
Rudhi Lakshana is not accompanied by any suggestion. It just doesn't generate a suggestion. And therefore, some say that it's useless. You know, at least it doesn't serve too much poetic purpose. Poetry, we're always trying to create some suggestion, then it's real valuable poetry. But Prayojanavati Lakshana, by definition, it has a purpose. The purpose is to generate some suggestion. And in fact, now we're going to focus on Prayojanavati Lakshana, because it has special interest for the poets in that it generates suggestion. So we're going to further subdivide Prayojanavati Lakshana. Saropa and Sadhyavasana. You want to ask another question?
About the Gonata. Second.
That will be clarified later. We're going to discuss it again. But yes?
Well, that's Kumarila Bhatta, second line in the verse.
Yeah, well, what he's saying is when the Lakshana is in terms of quality, not in terms of some other relationship. Like you can metaphorically equate the cause and the effect, or the owner and the thing owned. That's other relationships. But if it's just a relationship of sharing the same quality, like you say, that villager is a bull, the only thing that's the bull, you know, the man and the bull, they share the same stupidity. It's the quality. So it's by quality that the man is metaphorically a bull. That would be Gona. Gauna means secondary. That would mean it's like it's less potent metaphor than a metaphor based on other relationship. And Kumarila Bhatta and some others consider that a separate, independent mode of expression. Whereas our school of Kavya just has it to be a subdivision of Lakshana. Kumara Bhatta is separating it from Lakshana in a separate category. Just a matter of terminology. You may run across, if you're studying poetry, you may run across either viewpoint. That's probably why Kavi Karnapur goes out of his way to mention both, because both of them are in use, both of the definitions. Okay. Now, prayojana fati lakshana can be of two different kinds, called saropa and sajavasana. Those are mysterious terms, but the ideas are not that difficult. You have two things involved in a metaphor. Like when you're talking about the face is a moon, you have the face and you have the moon. The face is the aropa vishaya. It's that the object of the imposition of another idea, aropa. It's not really a moon, but you're imposing on the face the idea of a moon. So the face is the aropa vishaya, the victim of the imposition. And the thing that gets imposed, the aropyamana, is the moon. There's a difference. We have a real face and an imaginary moon. They're not equal in their status of existence. The face is real, the moon is imaginary. But the moon is being imposed on the face. So, okay, so this distinction is, if both of them are actually expressed, it's called sarupa. That means it includes the imposition. No, I'm sorry. I don't even know how to explain the term, but the term is there, sarupa. Aropa is the imposition, together with the imposition. But it's defined as that metaphor in which they both are expressed, the face and the moon. The aropa vishaya and the aropyamana are both explicit. Then it's called saropya. And if the imposed swallows up the actual original, like if the moon swallows up the face and there's no talk of a face anymore, just of a moon, then it's called sajavasana. Sa-adyavasana. And they're both subcategories of not of Rudi Lakshana, but only of Prayojana Vati Lakshana. Examples given. Amritam Shri Krishna Guna Shravanam. We'll take Amritam to be the predicate here. The hearing of Krishna's qualities is nectar. Well, it's not literally a liquid beverage, but there is the idea of nectar is imposed on it. The real thing is the hearing, and the idea of being nectar is imposed on that, metaphorically. But in this case, both are expressed. The real hearing and the imaginary nectar are both being stated in the same sentence. So it's saropa. Do I have it backwards? No, saropa. Prayojana vati lakshana. And, okay. Now, that's a devotional example. The non-devotional poets, they like to give the example Gaur Vahika. That person who lives outside the village, Vahika. The person lives here, outside. That outcast is a stupid bull. The imposed bull is there, and the original villager are both there in the sentence expressed. They're both explicit. So it's another example of sarupa, prayojana vati lakshana. Suggestion is there in both cases. Suggested in the first case is, instead of reading the newspaper, why don't you read about Krishna? Or the suggestion with the man we're calling a bull is that I wouldn't try to teach him quantum physics. He won't understand it. I don't expect him to act too smart. Suggestion is there in both cases. Yes?
How exactly it swallows the...
Didn't get to that one yet. If you say... Amritam evam edad, this is simply nectar.
And that's your sentence. Well, the Krishna hearing about Krishna has disappeared. It's been swallowed up by the nectar. The idea of hearing about Krishna is not there in the sentence anymore. It's been swallowed by the nectar. The metaphorical, imaginary thing has taken over and pushed out the real thing. Or if you said, you know, you're looking at some woman's face and you're saying, this moon is spotless. You know, you're so deluded that you don't even notice it's a face anymore. Then that's also in the case of the original being swallowed by the imaginary, metaphorical thing. That's called sadhyavasana. Prayojanavati lakshana, yes? What is he? Oh, he's nectar, yeah. Yeah, yes. Then, you know, he's not even Bhagwan anymore, he's just pure nectar. Yeah. But it still mentions the Bhagavatam. It mentions, the book is still there. The book hasn't dissolved completely into nectar. The book hasn't been swallowed by the nectar yet. Not in that case. You actually have all different degrees of the metaphor taking over. And they're recognized in the theory of poetry. There's several different terms for them. Yes. Then you said you're talking about both. And in fact, you're just saying it's like nectar. You're not saying it is nectar. That's a lesser degree. That's less radical. That's a simile, not a metaphor. When you have a word like, when you say the face is the moon, that's more literal. That's more radical. If you said the face is like the moon, that's saying it more mildly. That's just a simile. If you say the face is the moon, and if you go one step further, you forget about the face, and it's just, this moon, you just talk about the moon. Then that is a case where the original has been swallowed up by the metaphor. What about the nectar of his face? Can you make a sentence out of it?
So, for example, the nectar of his face.
Yes.
So it's also example of a saropa.
No, because you're mentioning both.
Yes.
Saropa, because the original is still there. Uh-huh. It's just a question of whether the original is still mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yes.
In this example, it seems that the it's swallowed up because you're speaking about the beauty of his face.
Where?
The beauty of, like in the example of the nectar of his face. But actually, you mean the beauty of his face.
Well, I don't know. See, we're talking in English. It's a little vaguer in English.
Yeah.
If we're using the word amrita, amrita is a substance. It's actually a liquid. Yeah. Demigods drink it to remain immortal. That's what amrita is literally. The drink that the demigods drink to make them immortal. So it doesn't mean beauty. Metaphorically, it might represent beauty.
But in English, you would say the beauty of his face is nectar. Then you would say...
That's metaphorical?
But then say the nectar of his face. That's like an example of sadhyavasana.
Yeah, if the beauty is the original... Then and the beauty is no longer mentioned, then it's sadhyavasana. Anyway, because English is not built the same way as Sanskrit, sometimes these definitions will, you know, these concepts will fit in other languages and sometimes they won't. You know, what a metaphor, a simile is in English is not exactly the same as in Sanskrit. The definition given in the Karaka, adinantar nigirne charame sati,
when the second one has been swallowed up by the first one, then that's sadhya vasana. And what's left out is prayojanavati lakshana. That's implied. The prayojanavati lakshana is sadhya vasana. It's called sadhya vasana when the second one has swallowed up the first one. Well, the two, the first and the second, are the aropya mana and the aropa vishaya. The metaphorical moon and the literal face. When the face has been swallowed up by the moon. Like when you say, this is just nectar. This isn't hearing about Krishna. This is just nectar. It isn't anything else but nectar. Amitam evedam. Or the non-devotional example, gaure vayam. This is just a stupid bull. It's not even a village. There's no villager here. It's just a stupid bull. That's sadhyavasana. Okay, now, both of those kinds of prayojanavati lakshana can be further divided in each of them into, according to whether it's gauna or ordinary lakshana. Here we're taking gauna as a subcategory. Same definition of gauna, that it's simply in terms of quality, similar quality, and not in terms of some other relationship. Bide dwe dvivide ime. Both of these, it's dual. The saropa and the sadhyavasana lakshanas, both of them can be either gauna or shuddha. Shuddha means not gauna. The pure or shuddha lakshana is based on some other kind of relationship other than just similarity. Of quality, similarity, something else than just similarity. You can understand that just being similar is a weaker relationship than something more concrete. If someone looks like the President of the United States, that's just coincidental. But if he's actually his younger brother, there's a real relationship. So just similarity is a weak relationship. Other relationships are more concrete. Causation, identity, generation, father and son. These are concrete relationships. So that's based on a concrete relationship, you have a shuddha lakshana. Based on just similarity of quality, then you have gauna or secondary lakshana. Well, how about some example? Well, here's some examples of the shuddha lakshanas. Yeah? That means that in general, prayojanavati lakshana of both kinds, of the saropa kind and the sadhyavasana kind, they both can be divided in this way. So you just end up with We had two kinds of lakshana, rudhi and prayojanavati. That's two. Then the prayojanavati gets divided up into another two, and then another two, and then each of those two get divided up into two. So we're getting into large number of subdivisions. A tree getting divided up into smaller and smaller branches. Okay. Here's example of shuddha lakshana. Bhagavad Bhaktir Mahat Sangaha. Translation is that the association of saintly devotees is devotion to the Supreme Lord. Well, it's not literally, but it's the cause. It's the prime, most efficient cause of Bhagavad Bhakti. So here we're metaphorically equating the cause and the effect. That's the relationship here. So it's shuddha. It's a concrete relationship. Now, you could also say Bhagavad Bhaktir Evayam. You could let the Bhagavad Bhakti swallow up the association of devotees. You know, you can be actually talking about the association of devotees, but you say, this is just devotional service to the Supreme Lord and nothing else. The original has been swallowed up by the metaphor. So both those cases, Saropa and Sajavasana, they both are in this case Shuddha. They're both based on a concrete relationship. Even though one member of the relationship is not expressed in the second form. Okay, the non-devotional example is Ayurgritam. Ghee is life. Ghee is long life. Well, ghee is not long life. It's melted, it's cooked down butter. But it's the cause of long life. It's an Ayurvedic statement. Ghee is long life. That is an example of Saropa Shuddha Lakshana. And if you just said Ayurvedam, Ayurvedam, you're holding up a cup of ghee, but you're saying, this is long life itself. And you don't even mention, the ghee has been swallowed up by the long life. So that's Sajavasana. Shuddha Prayojanaviti Lakshana. Or, another example, if you're talking about, if you say that the activity, intermediate activity, that is for the purpose of Krishna's devotional service, like brushing your teeth or something, you say that is devotional service to Krishna. Well, there's nothing extremely ecstatically pleasing to Krishna about my having a foaming mouth and brushing my teeth. But it's an anga of devotional service. It's one of the things I have to do in order to practice devotional service. I don't go in front of the deity without doing that first. So metaphorically, it is service that pleases Krishna, metaphorically. Now there, what's the category here? That's an example of tadatmya, of metaphorical equivalence. Not so much causation, but it is a kind of devotional service to Krishna, but it's just a secondary anga. Another example is Swami and Swamya, the possessor and the possession. Like Krishnasya Sakha Krishna. Krishna's friend is called Krishna. Say it's Subal. His name is really Subal. But sometimes he gets called Krishna because he's such a close friend of Krishna. Yeah, others too. But here we got the example of Subal. So there, it's a relationship of the owner, because Krishna is the owner of the friendship. Yes. The Krishnas, yeah. Yeah, like that. But that's still a concrete relationship. And sometimes having such and such as your activity is a relationship. Krishna is called Krishno Gopalanad Gopa. Krishna is called Gopa because that's what he does. He protects, he takes care of the cows. Now, why is that a metaphor? Because the literal meaning of Gopa or Gopala is it's a name of a jati. It's a name of a caste, and it's a low class. It's actually below Shudra, the Gopas, the Abhiras. But Krishna and his family are not Abhiras; they're Vaishyas. So, but they're Vaishyas who choose to take care of cows. So in this case, it's metaphor. When you use the word gopa, not to refer to that outcast, guala, but you refer to someone else who's acting as a guala, that's metaphorical. And here it's based on that this is his activity. It's still a concrete relationship, so it's still Shuddha Lakshana in calling Krishna Gopa. Yes, he also takes care of cows, but he's not an abhira, he's not an outcast, he's a Vaishya. Now, in all these cases, these are all Prayojanavati Lakshanas. There's always something being suggested in all these examples. Rudi Lakshana doesn't divide up into these categories. Yes. Yes, so far, all examples of Shuddha. Which? Yes, yes. Yes, the example of Krishna Seva, Arto Vyapara, Krishna Seva. Some activity that's intermediate, but it's for the purpose of serving Krishna. There, it's also called service to Krishna. That was my example. Well, brushing your teeth is a devotional activity, isn't it?
Tadatmya with Krishna, in a sense, equivalent, metaphorically equivalent.
Because it really is an act of devotional service. But not in the sense of something that stimulates ecstasy in Krishna. It's devotional service in practice, not ecstatic devotional service. Maybe somebody, some devotee, serves Krishna ecstatically by brushing his teeth. Yes?
Is it not in of itself? It's not in itself.
Well, it is, but it's devotional service in practice. Because you have that big ambiguity of the word bhakti. It means both. Spontaneous ecstatic loving service and also practicing service. Which? Well, Rupa Goswami lists such things as sanghas, doesn't he? That, you know, getting up in the morning and taking care of your body. Anyway, it was my example. You can discount it. You can throw it away.
It supports bhakti, but it is not bhakti itself. Like brushing teeth, taking bath, and so on.
Gana bhakti. Okay. Okay, I think that's what he's talking about here. Things that are supportive of devotional service but aren't directly devotional service. They're metaphorically called devotional service. Tadatmya, proper understanding of what tadatmya means, is being of the same substance. You know, the gold that they put on top of your burfi is real gold. But it's such a small quantity of gold that it doesn't have any commercial value. You know, the burfi costs 2 rupees, and it's 6 rupees, and the gold on top of it is worth less than 1 rupee. So it's gold. It's the same substance as gold, but it's not, gold that you're going to sell on the market. Not that much of it. So brushing your teeth is of the same substance as real activities of devotional service, but it's just on a different level. Or it's equivalent to devotional service, well, and it leads to devotional, but that's causation. That would be the category of cause and effect, and he's putting this into a different category. Yes.
For example, in Pancharatra Pratipa it is said that there are a few activities which are supporting deity worship. For example, this one is taking bath and so on, and also studying shastras and proper behavior. It doesn't mean that while studying shastras we are worshiping deities, but it helps because it creates a proper consciousness in which we can worship deities. So it's like a preliminary activities for doing proper worship.
Yes, yes. They're not even causes of devotional service. They're just supportive of devotional service. So not in the causation category.
Yes. In, let's not like, go off too far.
Yeah. Yeah, like in the Upanishads, they give general terms like Amrita and Prana and all. Everything refers to the Lord. So can we take it as an instances of Sadatmya? What is it? Sadhyavasana.
Yes.
Lakshanavritti.
Exactly. Those would be properly understood as Lakshanavritti and Sadhyavasana, because when you're calling, you know, the absolute truth Vayu or Jyoti, that's metaphorical. It's not that we got, you know, different competitors for the absolute truth. The, you know, the wind is competing against for our votes against the light. No, they're both metaphorical terms for the same one absolute truth. And because we're only talking about Vayu or about Jyoti and not about absolute truth, therefore it's Sadhyavasana. The original has been swallowed up. Yeah. Not, it's not explicit.
And all the primary names of Krishna, like Bhakta Vatsala, or so many different names which describe his quality, those also are like Lakshanavritti, like which.
Well, the problem is that names of Krishna are usually properly understood as Ruti Lakshana, because by derivation, many people might be Bhakta Vatsala in their own way. You know, Mr. So-and-so, owner of the factory, he's very, very, you know, kind to his workers. You could call him Bhakta Vatsala by derivation, but by convention it refers to Krishna. But that's Ruti Lakshana, and therefore it doesn't get divided up into these categories. There's no... Anyway.
But, like, even those meanings can have suggestions, like the rasa can be evoked. So how can the Ruti Lakshana evoke?
Well, the thing is, Bhakta Vatsala is not really a name, it's a description. You know, so therefore, it can be, it doesn't have to be Ruti Lakshana. It can be Prayojanavati. That depends on whether the author had any purpose. You know, it's up to the author to have a purpose, to make a suggestion. Suggestions don't just come out of nowhere. They're supposed to be created by the author, by the speaker. If the speaker had the suggestion in mind, then you can say it's there. But if it's just accidental, you could imagine a suggestion, but the author didn't intend it, that doesn't work. Okay, we're going to stop here. We still need to discuss what about the Gona Lakshana. These are examples of Shuddha Lakshana. Well, what are the examples of Gona Lakshana? We're going to discuss that more. Okay. So thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Kavi Karnapur. It's an offense. Okay.
At least you'll offend with bad breath.
It's the same upper one. It's the number 9 on the second list. One to not fail to wash his teeth very carefully every day.
It's also yoga kriya. It's a yoga kriya.
Yoga kriya.
It's a daily activity in practicing yoga.
Oh, it's my